Blog Talk Radio.
As the legend goes, an old Cherokee was teaching his grandson about life. He said to the boy, "A fight is going on inside me. It is a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, guilt, lies, superiority, and ego. The other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, humility, kindness, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you, and inside every other person too." The grandson thought about it for a minute, and then he asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one you feed."
Depends on what part of the world you're listening. Bienvenidos, K-Pal, Namaste, Oki, and welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. It is July 20th, 2022. We are live every Monday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, here on blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffects. That's the letter FX. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosting duties, holding down the other half of our hosting duties. Some call him the Lions Historian. Others call him Unc. I just simply call him my best friend. He's my dad, Bill Green. What's happening, Daddy-O? How you doing tonight, man? Let's get it going. What's going on?
What's up? Man, I tell you, your intro sounds more and more like a DJ. I love it. My man.
Come my to man, the right on, now. Man. We all know
Let me turn you up. Yeah, let me turn you up a little bit. I can hardly hear you. Okay. Huh? That probably helps. Huh? Yeah, man, so here we are, right? 2 days removed from Monday. And, you know, shootings continue, you know, brothers being mowed down for three very different reasons.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I'm not going to get all into that right at this very moment, and really not intending to at all tonight. Traffic stop for brothers and sisters. I said yet. I didn't say but. Yet. You know, traffic stops for brothers and sisters out here is anything but routine. Unless, of course, we accept the routine as you know, potentially being mowed down. So anyway, you know, it sneaks up on me sometimes. You know, I've been kind of avoiding just turning on the news,
yeah,
like I had done prior to going away for my couple weeks. And now it's just, you know, like maybe just for a half hour or so, but still, doesn't matter. Well, I turn on first thing in the morning, later on in the afternoon, or last thing at night, you know, still something just reaches out and grabs me, I'll say by the throat. I won't say by the nuts. Oh, I just said it. Anyway, anyway, man.
Gotta
so,
crank it up.
You know, yeah, man. So anyway, so, you know, that's what's up. How you doing, man?
Yeah, you know, I'm okay. I'm good. You know, like we always do, you know, we mentioned Monday, how we you know, yeah, what's normal? We just, you know, we kind of push through things and try to make the positive light about it. But, you know, I mean, it's Wednesday. And so with every, at least with every show, I know at least, man, listen, I know at least twice a week, I'm in a good place. Even if
amen,
that's for an hour.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Amen. Amen.
I'm in a good place. So, you know, it's always a very interesting question to answer when we do this show, like, you know, how am I doing? You know, I think that a lot of us have to balance those scales, that scale of life, you know, like I'm good on this hand. I'm in the present moment. I'm doing this show with my pops, doing this show, and I see my family, you know, listening, you know, but then on the other side, you know, before that, there's this that happens. Even after the show ends, we still got to go back to this, you know. But then meanwhile, we have to deal with the issues that we see here in our country.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen.
You know, but before we get going, I'm going to go ahead and stop us and remind us of our due diligence. Like we do
there
on every
go.
Show, we like to remind you all, the listeners out there, to grab that pen and pad, a pencil and paper, a post-it note, a marker, the back of an envelope, or a napkin if you got one. We just want to make sure you got something to write with, you got any questions, any comments, something that comes to your mind. We just, you know, we just want to make sure you don't forget it. We want to make sure you don't miss it. You might even pick up something from these guys bantering, you know, tonight. You just never know what you get on our show. So we want to make sure you don't miss it. And who knows, maybe you might even want to share it. And we'll get to that in a minute. So we have a couple of ways that you can engage with us on our live shows, Mondays and Wednesdays. One way is that you can dial in direct. Hopefully you got that pen and pad handy by now. Front side of the napkin, Adam says, not the back of the napkin. That's right. That's what gets the ketchup. So our number here is 516-453-6094. Again, that's 516-453-6094. And if you do have any questions, comments, something you want to share, maybe you want to give us a shout out, just say hello. Press 1 on the keypad. That'll put your number in our queue. And we'll bring you in as soon as we can. You all kind of know about the 1,000 words versus 100, and I'm not going to get into that. So there you have our phone number to dial in. You can also engage with us in the chat room directly on Blog Talk Radio site. Again, that's blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffect, the letter FX, with your free Blog Talk Radio profile. At the bottom of our episode for tonight, you'll see the chat room. Just jump on in. And I know Adam's already holding it down. Dad's already engaged as well. You can talk with us through the chat room. And then there's ye old Facebook. You may have received the event page, the event invite.
Right on. Yeah.
So there's a discussion tab. You can holler at us in the discussion tab as well. So there you have it, our due diligence from the Green Boys on the Green House.
Amen.
Community.
Right on. Yeah, or you could just lay back in the cut and just listen.
I mean, you know,
that's always an option too. Yeah. And who knows? But maybe those of you who do make a comment or two, maybe we'll learn something. We will learn something. Yeah. It's hard to say will and not mean will, or will and not mean will. Anyway, let me shut up. I'm tripping
kind of the same
already.
Thing.
Yeah. All right, man. So beautiful job as always, you know.
Thank you.
Go
ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go, man, please. Go right ahead on.
No, I'm just saying, you know, like, so, you know, in the beginning of the show, man, it's so hard living this life. A constant struggle each and every day. But I won't accept. Sing it. Go ahead. Come on.
Living is life. I got to learn the words to that, man. I got to
struggle
every day.
Right.
But
then
I
they go
won't
on.
Tell you.
I won't accept. Ha. This is how it's going to be. I won't accept. This is how it's going to be.
Yeah, there you go. I got to learn.
Know.
Who is that again?
It's from a group from Atlanta called the Goody Mob, the Goody M-O-M-O-B. Goody Mob. The good die
okay,
mostly over
goody.
Bush. Yeah.
Okay.
ATL. They're not together anymore.
Right on.
They left a good song.
That
was back in my ATL days. They left an impression.
Right on. So here we are, huh?
Yeah. Trying to, you know, not accepting that this is how it's going to be. You know, I mean, we talk about these gun laws when it comes to when there's a mass shooting of white males who get detained and remain alive. And then there's discussion. There's not any discussion when black males get cut down or, like you say, mowed down, you know, mental
well,
health
there
issues.
Is a discussion. There is a discussion. It may not be, you know, in the general format we're looking for, but that's on us. You know, if we keep looking, you know, in the same place that has, you know, invisibilized us to become visible, that's on us. We owe it to ourselves to visibilize ourselves. So outlets like this or whatever else, you know, the creative mind of black folks can come up with. You know, we used to do it with drums. So it's not like even when the drums were taken away from us. In the West Indies, we invented steel drums, you know, steel, S-T-E-E-L, not S-T-I-L-L. You know, so, you know, we don't need to depend on, you know, modern media to address our issues. You know, it would be great. Yeah, it would be great if we were to focus and not the, oh, yeah, by the way. You know, but we got to remember, police, you know, are trained to do whatever it is that they do to win the fight, you know. And I think we forget that sometimes. They're trained to win. So, you know, if they're trained on how to disarm a mass shooter, you know, they're going to do what they have to do. If they can disarm them, great. If not, take them out. I don't know what their training is to deal with black men that run a stop sign in traffic and jump out their ride in front of their crib and run in the house. You know, obviously, based on what I read in the news, it means breaking down the door and beating the hell out of them with batons, you know, until he can't see and talk, you know. So, you know, or worse yet, you know, plug him in the back as he's running away. Maybe that's how they're trained. I don't know any police. Do you?
Well, maybe one, maybe a couple. Yeah, but they don't.
Well, maybe those are the
training.
Ones to ask the questions to. Well, maybe you need to ask them the question. If I knew police, you know, I did growing up. All my uncles were police, it seemed, and those that I thought were uncles, you know, neighbors. They were all, you know, but these weren't the questions then, you know.
Yeah.
But if you know a couple, great, ask them. You know, what's up with this? You know, I mean, get it firsthand. And if they say, sorry, you know, we're not allowed to talk about this, or I don't want to go against the grain. It'd be a great thing to hear you report back to us. This is what came right out of the horse's mouth, or the horse's end.
I'll tell you that there was one incident. But there was one response I got from a police officer. I had invited them to come on the show, and they refused because they were concerned that their voice would be recognized, and that they didn't.
So why was that a concern?
They just said no, and their reason for saying no was because they thought that their voice would be recognized, and they didn't want to take any chances.
That's the reason. Okay, they didn't want to take any chances. Okay. All right. How long ago was that?
But, you know, I mean, I was going to say, it's not like it's just because one person said no, then I won't ask anybody else. So I was just letting you know there was one. There was one. But
How long ago was that?
Maybe about.
Because I kind of remember. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, maybe a couple of years ago or so.
That's what I was going to say. I kind of remember that, you know. Well, a lot of stuff has happened over the course of the last couple of years. So I don't know, you know, anyway, you know, we can go back and forth with that. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, take a chance when we have a chance and hear what it is, you know, that they got to say about it. I wish that all of my, you know, uncles and play uncles and police of the hood were still alive. You know, I sure would like to get, you know, their opinion of what's going on, you know, and you know, what the perceived norm is within the department. You know, do they consider this to be normal, you know, or do they have a rationale, you know, that supports, you know, that brute force that is used so often, you know, with what seems to be a targeted class or group or race or culture of people. So, it's not even confined to black men. That seems to be, you know, what the media would rather, you know, present. But we had past shows where we identified, you know, 60 black females that have been mowed down, you know, by the police since the late 60s. So, you know, the thing is, the question is, right, before I go off on a tangent and you have to try to figure out how to reel me back in, you know, what is the perceived norm for black people in America? And if I may, it'd be just as good of an opportunity as any to let everybody know that it's a special show tonight. You know, we're going 2 hours. I know some of you probably say, what's so special about that? 'Cause we almost always seem to go over. But the idea is to make this a special 2 hours. So it's not going to go 2.5 hours or 2 hours 15 minutes, you know, if we even go 2 hours. But the time frame is 2 hours. So, you know, so anyway, I'd like to say, so for those of you who have comments or, you know, are formulating your ideas or waiting for an opportunity to jump in, I think we'll have ample time to cover whatever anybody might have to say or put on the chat in the chat room any comments as well. Because, you know, we've gone around it, no question about it, in the years that we've been, it feels good to say the years that we've been doing the show.
Yeah.
We've gone around it. It's been added to a couple of our topics of discussion, but I don't recall a time where it's been the focus of dialogue that we're actually talking about what is normal to be black in America. And that's, you know, that's the generalized topic. That doesn't mean that's the only topic. What's up, Nephew Ray? He just popped in the chat room. You know, that's the overall general topic, but not the singular topic. There's always room for other commentary, you know, as long as it doesn't take us too far off the beaten path, you know, related stories, whatever the case may be. I have one that I hope time allows me to get to. Very touching. For me, it is very touching to have relived it, you know, and actually relived it tonight or this afternoon. And I'm preparing for tonight you know, it kind of it moved me to a place of, you know, tears, because I hadn't thought about it, you know, since I heard the story in 84. So hopefully get a chance to get to it. But just so, you know, and I hope I'm not overstepping, you know, my bounds here, EP, you know, in case y'all don't know what EP is, it's executive producer. Will is the one who runs the show. And sometimes I forget my pay grade, and he has to remind me after we go off the air. So hopefully I haven't overstepped my bounds this time, man, this go around.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to remind you all to please pull up your pants, tighten those shoelaces very tight, fold in those socks, because we're in for 2 hours tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Pull up those pants.
My man.
Lace up those
shoe
straps.
My man. All right. So here we go. Here we go. And they're off. All right. So what we got tonight, man? You know, where are we at?
I mean,
you know,
how do we begin? Yeah. Let's go back.
You know, from the 13th. You know, and let's just kind of, if you don't mind, you know, because I got it right in front of me in case you don't have it in front of you. Just a quick review on the 13th. You know, that's when Routine Change was first put out there, you know, and that's where you were talking about the high five habit,
right?
The morning high five at the beginning of the day. Right. And it was mentioned in Creatures of Habit and what that entails. You know, there were some things that in that show on the 13th that I don't know, it just was off and running before I knew it, so I really didn't get a chance to talk about some of the points I wanted to make about, you know, high-fiving yourself. And I just want to, you know, this quote by Billy Billups, a very dear friend of mine. Billy spelled with an I-E, so that means it was a female. You know, although when we talk to each other, I call her Bill and she calls me Billy. That's just what we do. And she said, if you don't take care of your body, where are you going to live? Man, I love that quote. You know, if you don't take care of your body, where are you going to live? You know, so, and then she listed a whole lot of things, you know, to be done and taking care of yourself. And then on the 18th? Okay. Maybe that should have been the 15th. I don't know. I might have. No. No, it was the 13th. Okay, it's the 13th and the 15th combined shows. I got it. Or maybe it wasn't. Maybe the 13th was a Wednesday. Okay, and then fast forward to the 18th.
Right.
Yeah, and we continued with routine and change, you know. And let me see if I can see what some – you remember some of the highlights of that show? That would have been like maybe last
– from Monday or last Wednesday?
That would have been last Wednesday. Yeah, the 18th. There were some things talked about. I don't know. Again, a lot of stuff talked about I didn't talk about. You know, I just kind of winged it based on where we went, like we do, you know. But one of the things that was meant to be discussed is I made perfect by God's hand, but what I do with that perfection is another issue. You know, that's what, you know, people like to say, I'm not perfect. Well, we start out perfect, perfectly made. Nothing's wasted. You know, it's what we do with that perfection that's a trip. Well, what I do with it, you know, because I'm probably the only person I know who's not perfect. You know, so it's not who we are, you know, but how we do who we are. You know, and I think that's where we led into the topic, you know, of, you know, what's normal being black. But, of course, we talked about so many other related things and issues. I don't know if you have anything in your notes. But it seemed like the main focus was things to do to take care of ourselves. And I really like what we talked in regards to the value of not just high-fiving ourselves first thing in the morning, but any time during the course of the day, the challenges that we're willing to take on, the issues that we confront, that we don't roll over and play dead around, the times we step up to the plate and make ourselves visible. I think those times are times that we deserve to give ourselves a high five too. Those times when maybe we have a fit of emotional reaction to somebody cutting us off in traffic, right? But then we regain our senses. You know, that's a high five, you know?
Bring it
man.
Back. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
You know?
That's right.
Yeah, man. You know,
I mean, many times.
Those times.
You might want to stomp on the gas pedal, catch up to that person that pissed you off. Like, you know, and I mean, like,
yeah.
What you going to do once you catch up to them?
Yeah.
But you have this impulse, you know, like, let me follow up on this negative emotional response that I'm getting from this other person. Let me go ahead and feed into this. And then it's like, you know, so not doing that. Yeah. Yeah. Give yourself a high five. Exactly. I'm sorry. I was just feeling it, man. I'll be listening to you sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm feeling the picture in myself in these moments. And it's like,
absolutely, man. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and then, you know, like a question in the chat room, which brings us back to earth with a resounding thud. You know, Adam says, will black people ever know what normal is? Well, that's the whole point of the show. I mean, if we, what's that old African proverb? If you don't know who you are, anybody can name you. So, you know, this is the whole point of what is normal. You know, we react to things, right? We respond to things. We take on things. Is it normal to struggle with identity? You know, is it normal to avoid speaking on issues of invisibility? Is it normal to have adversarial relationships with significant others? Is it normal to verbally and physically abuse each other? Is black-on-black crime normal? Is it normal to call each other nigger, you know, while being offended by that word when being used by those who trained us to use the word in the first place? You know, is it normal, you know, not to be allowed to know our history, you know, critical race theory and woke and so forth, right? I mean, these are the questions. Is it normal for a child in a socioeconomically impoverished community to have no interest in attending a school that doesn't teach him or her about themselves, meaning their history? So is it normal to take on careers, you know, that don't highlight, you know, if I'm black, is it normal for me to take on a career like a cop, you know, and don't defend the defenseless when one of my colleagues is beating the hell out of him or her, you know, because, you know, we're a brotherhood. Is that a normal way to see it? You know, I spent 2 weeks in the mountains, right? Mm-hmm. And I have a question for you, Will, and I'm depending on your answer or anybody else, any of the millions.
The millions.
Out there. You know, I have white friends. I have black friends. Most of my white friends I only hook up with when I go on these sabbaticals or these meditation retreats. You know, that's the world I know most of my white friends in. Most of my black friends I engage when I come down from the mountain, because most of these things I go to in the mountains, I'm almost always the only black person, definitely the only black male there. So we mingle, we kick it, we talk, you know, and for 2 weeks spent living together, we share, you know, intimate themes of issues. And I've learned over the course of 38 years of doing this, you know, how not to be as concerned as I was 38 years ago by offending people when I decide to show up. But I still struggle with the timing of showing up. I don't do that when I come down on the mountain. As soon as I'm talking to you or kicking it with your nephew Ray or right on down the line, your brothers, I'm showing up as soon as I show up, you know. But, you know, amongst, you know, the peripheral crowd, you know, of folks that I call friends, but I don't really have much of and engage dialogue with once I come down off the mountain. You know, I'm always somewhat, you know, intrepid. You're always cautious about, you know, what to expect, because the friends aren't always the same people, rarely. Maybe one, maybe two, but usually out of 30, 35, you know, at best one or two will be people I know. So it's like I like what is said, you know, and I believe it. You know, we show up, you know, to the circle, you know, amongst a crowd of strangers. But when we leave with a heart full of friends, you know, and I like to believe that. But I'm also not, I'm not as naive to believe that, you know, this friendship is a binding contract of flourishing relationships. No, that is rarely the experience. And I don't know how many, and I've never asked, come to think of it, how many black friends, you know, these folks have. I've never asked that question, you know, or am I the first coming, so to say. But, you know, so anyway, I mean, I've been around this long enough, you know, to, and then, you know, coming from the kind of family we belong to, where there's a lot of interracial marriages. And so therefore, you know, the dialogues are, all my life have been just regular dialogues, you know, regular conversations. And the, you know, arguments that would be indigenous of families that argue about whatever the points may be. Except one time I stepped, you know, outside of my pay grade, and I was sitting at a table full of scientists, you know, and, you know, scientists and those proficient in doctrine, you know, and so I asked a question I thought would be, you know, evocative of dialogue, or at least bring about a chuckle. Oh my God, what did I say it? I asked, you know, did God invent science, or did science invent God? And no. As soon as the silence followed my question, I thought, oh, shucks. I've done it again. I told you, Aunt Brenda, I got this invention, you know, and it's called a portable foot, you know, and the name of the invention would be the portable foot and mouth, where I could just pull it out my pocket, pull a cord, and then it inflates right away. I just jab it in my mouth. You know, I wish I had had one of them then, man. So right away, I heard from the scientists, you know, what do you mean? Science doesn't invent anything. You know, I heard about it. And I thought, damn, maybe I got to go to the bathroom, you know. But anyway, you know, and I thought I'd at least have the clergy to come to my rescue. But they kind of pushed their chairs back from the table. You know, and I thought, all right. I remember this, you know, I remember this from the Army, you know. I need a volunteer. And the last dude to step back is the one who gets taken. So anyway, man. So you know, this whole struggle, this whole issue, this whole confusion, you know, around that question: will black people ever know what normal is? I guess it all depends on who defines it at any given time. Yeah. Like, yeah. You know. Do we have a working definition of normal? So, I mean, you know, yeah. I don't know. Somewhere in there was my question to you, and I forgot what it was. You know, but hopefully you have an answer.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you what was your direct question to me and the listening audience out there. So maybe I'm sure it'll come back to you. So,
well, do you think it's a normal thing? Or what do you think about that thing that normal that I just, you know, that not, that forget normal, that situation I just described. I go up in the mountain, and I already know, you know, that the dominant number of people, you know, are going to be white, and the dominant number is going to be female. So I already know that. And every once in a while, there'll be a sprinkling of, like, maybe Mexican or Asian descent. But I already know that. So, but I go knowing what I'm going for, and I know going the energies that I'll engage. But then I'll leave, you know, with so much of the valued experience with me. But then I return to my set and setting, you know, and step right back into the identity I'm most familiar with. Is that normal? That's my question. What do you think?
I mean, I think that. Yeah, I think that is normal. I think that's just I think that's what we all do. I think we still find those moments of familiarity, regardless of how big or how small. The only difference, though, between you and me and everybody else, I think, is probably our experiences. You know, I wonder what my response would be, let's say, if I went to a Chicago public school instead of going to private Catholic school, high school.
Yeah.
You know, if I didn't have the experience of interacting with,
gotcha,
you know, other races, you know, how would that have, you know, what would my life be like? How would things be different? How would things be the same? You know, even hanging out with you in the mountains, and being a part of, you know, breath work and holistic retreats and things like that. You know, I feel you, you know, because I was the youngest, you know, it was just me and you.
Yeah.
You know, and even though we were father and son, we were still two black men. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
you know, we were,
right.
It was just two dudes, you know, so... I even think about the last job I had working in the city and being the oldest, not only the oldest male within this company, but being mm-hmm. the oldest black male in this company of course, majority white workers. There were maybe two other brothers, three other black guys.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe about four or five black females, you know, and, mm-hmm. and a few Latinas. But, you know, that's still that, even working with them and hanging out
mm-hmm.
with them and doing the things that we were doing, I still, at the end of the day, I still found this need to, not the need, but just this feeling of still having to be around my people, you know, and even though we worked in Inglewood, you know, and even though I was around my people, I was still doing the job. And that's still like the question you're asking, like, you know, even like with your career and being a police officer, when
yeah.
you're trained
yeah.
in, I should say, you know, so, you know, you still have to figure out how to deal with the complexity of protecting the people, but still having to deal with, let's just call it what it is, the
yeah.
BS and fear sometimes that probably exists within your own coworkers. But if you go
yeah.
against the grain, then what happens with your support? What happens when you're going to need help, you know, if you're faced with a situation? Because they deal in combat.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah.
when you come into a combative situation, you need your backup, you know, but even though you're quote unquote, air quotes, doing the right thing to support the right thing. It ain't even about your people. You know, you can even be a white person seeing the BS that happens, you know, in other communities, you know, and you're trying to support these people.
Yeah, but let's keep it on black.
Let's just keep it on. Yeah, I know. I'm just saying. You know me, man. I get caught up in that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. They good.
They're going to be all right. They're going to be all right, man. But even like the graphic you posted for tonight, you know, and we talked about Monday and last week, you know, what's more important? Journey
yeah.
of the destination. We talked about those things, and the
yeah.
comment and the quote was the company. You know, so what kind of company are you keeping? I mean, so anyway, coming back to that, what is normal? I mean, and there's been so many shows that we've talked about different strategic considerations, if you will. Different ways of looking at things. We've talked about different ways that we could support not only our own selves, our own individual selves, but also our own families and our communities and things like that. But even when we talk about these things and ourselves and our people and our community and money and all these things, there's still those basic questions and definitions that we're really not sure about. What is a community? What does that mean? What is the definition of community? What is your definition? What is my definition? Are there any similarities? What is your definition of success? What is your definition of being free? What is your definition of being equal? What is your definition of normalcy and being a black person in America?
But there it is right there. You know, that's the question, normalcy. You know, so let's just take a look at these few. You know, is it normal to struggle with identity if you're black? Is that normal? What do you think? Hello, hello.
I'm here, man. You know what I mean? I'm here. So now I think it's become normal to struggle with identity for being a black American. I think that's normal to deal with the struggle.
Okay.
Yes.
So do you want to elaborate or you want to just leave it at a yes answer?
I would love to just leave it at a yes answer, but I know you're not going to let me do
it. Well, we can come back to it. Let's come back to it. You know, let's move to the next one. Is it normal to avoid speaking on issues of invisibility? And just to elaborate on that, I'm speaking from the quote from Ralph Ellison in his book Invisible Man, when he said it is often advantageous to be invisible, although it can be rather wearing on the nerves. I'm guessing, I don't know, but I'm guessing that you've been in situations where you've been invisibilized, and regardless of how it felt internally, you know, you rode with the punches, thinking of, and maybe this isn't fair to you to put you on the spot like this, but I'm thinking of a time when you were in Mexico and y'all were in a truck and everybody was talking Spanish, you know, and there you were in this close confines, and I just kind of let it trail off at that point. Would that have been an example of feeling invisibilized? Again,
of feeling invisibilized, yeah. But you know,
okay.
I can separate that experience from because I was in a different country.
Well, yeah,
even in America, you can be in a bus. You can be a black male sitting on a bus going somewhere with a bunch of people, a bunch of white people, or a bunch of non-black people, and you're the only one there, and you still have these moments of feeling invisibilized. But then the question
I remember one time when I was selling dictionaries, and we would go to these strip malls or these stretches where it would be a lot of fast food places, whatever. But they were always on the north side, northwest side. They were never in the south side or familiar territories of the hood or anything, you know. And it was, you know, a white organization, and I was trained by white people, and I would be in a car full of, you know, white folk, white salespeople. And inevitably, wherever we were driving to, the radio would always be playing white music, white radio station, you know, and I'm sitting in the back of the car listening to this stuff, you know, and realizing that in that situation, it's not even a question of, Bill, would you like us to change the channel or the station? Bill, would you like to hear some different music? That wasn't even a question, and I wasn't going to say, hey, can you change the station? I'm tired of hearing this crazy white people music. Nah, instead, you know, I felt, you know, invisibilized. So
to me, yeah,
I guess
normal.
What I'm...
To me, that's normal. To me, I think that's what we have grown accustomed to as being normal.
So do you think that's normal or do you think that's conditioning?
Okay. Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
And therefore, so is that kind of conditioning a normal reaction or a normal response or a normal feeling? You know, this, to me, this is what I'm trying to get to, is the complexities of just what normal, you know, Adam asked the question. And, you know, I don't want to just throw out something without taking a look at what it would take to define what normal is for black folks in America. You know, is the conditioning normal? You know, that that's, you know, what we do, what we accept, you know, how we act or react. You know, that's just one example of a host of them. What is it like, you know, for an athlete, a black athlete, you know, to get a scholarship to a school that is predominantly white, and, you know, he's like the standout star of a predominantly white team. You know, what is the norm, you know, in a situation like that? You know, what is the norm for, you know, a black person in the educational system? So, and I'm thinking of your ma now, you know, back when you were like maybe 4, 3, 2, 1. Last, yeah, I think you were like 1. You had just been born. And so she had been at Kenwood, but when she took pregnancy leave, you know, and it's how the school system was and may still be, that when you take off to deliver a child, then you're at the mercy of the school system that determines, you know, yeah, you have a job, but we're going to send you where we want to send you, not back to where you were. So, you know, I don't know if it was punishment, if it was protocol, what. And she and I never talked about it, at least I don't remember. But then I wouldn't remember because I was, you know, I was busy in my practice of being unconscious back then. You know, so anyway, she wound up at this Kennedy High School, you know, which I think was on the far, I'm not sure where Kennedy was, Northside, I think. But it was like all white. And I never talked to her, at least don't remember ever talking with her about what that was like. I mean, like she had just been in Kenwood on the south side, you know, Kenwood Academy, which was a new and up and coming school. She was teaching, you know, African-American history, you know, 21 years old, probably one of the first teachers to be teaching it. And then, you know, all your fault, you know, she got pregnant and had to, you know, pop you out. All your fault.
Yeah, I was ready to come. It's my fault. I was ready.
You know, and all your fault.
In the ether too long.
Before accepted, yeah. You know, you chose us as your parents, you know, somewhere up there, you know, where you and Jeremiah were like dealing with the verse of, I knew you before you were formed in the womb. So anyway, so, you know, here we are. You know, here she is in a situation.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Huh? What'd you say?
No, I'm having a conversation with Jeremiah. Like, you see that guy Bill Green down there, man?
Oh, okay.
Watch this guy.
Yeah. And then she's taken out of this element that she kind of like developed and was thrown in a situation that could have cared less. And I'm sure she wasn't teaching African American history, but I never asked her about that. You know, so, you know, what is her response to that? What is the conditioning, I guess, just drawn from life experience and maybe life experience as a teacher and maybe already knowing ahead of time that chances are she's going to wind up being put in an element unfamiliar to her, you know, but, you know, that type of circumstance, I mean, is it, you know, how does it get translated into normal when it's a, you know, life experience kind of thing we're not prepared for?
I asked her about that one time, and I apologize because I can't recall exactly what she said, you know. But I'll tell you, from what I remember, it sounded like, you know, like they were trying to put her in that control again, that conditioning,
okay,
that controlled backyard, you know, that backyard without a leash.
That would make sense.
Know? You know that you've got this knowledge and you've got this and that, you know, you've got these skills, but we're going to put you here right now. And you can roam free, but you can't do nothing. you know, and that's what it felt like, you know, that kind of
position. that would kind of jive with my perception, you know, of such a circumstance. So okay, so number two, you say yes. Okay, so moving on to three, is it normal to have adversarial relationships with significant others when you're black? All of these is about being black. Okay. Is it normal to have adversarial relationships with significant others? Again,
I forgot you waiting for an answer.
You know,
no,
you know, or like, okay, you know, I mean, or maybe those would argue, well, adversarial relationships don't exist between, let's say, black men and black women, or black women and black men. You know, okay, I'm one who believes it does. You know, I'm one who believes that's, you know, once the audition phase is over with in courting someone, you know, then the conflicts begin, you know, and the conflicts are really born from the audition. It's like once that, you know, trying to get you to like me phase has, you know, and you know, vice versa, you know, then suddenly the issues, you know, born from expected dialogue begin to appear. And that's what I mean by adversarial. You know, suddenly, you know, we're the different ends of the spectrum, you know, as far as who I am as opposed to who you want me to be. Both ways, not one way. And that's what I mean by adversarial. Not really being clear about, you know, what we signed up for until we signed up. You know, and I think that all too often, you know, it's the non-discussed issues that never really work its way into the audition, you know, when other events take precedence, whatever those other events may be, you know. And so, you know, I only can base what I'm saying on how I viewed things growing up and how I've seen things as I advanced in the years. And I remember that there really wasn't a such thing as divorce in the black family system back in the 40s, 50s, and the early parts of the 60s, but really more the 40s and 50s. The 60s began to usher in a new approach in the employment arena. You know, at one time, you know, seeking a job was an employee's market. You could pretty much write out the script. You know, you could pretty much dictate what kind of job you wanted and what kind of salary, you know, and then it became an employer's market, but with a twist. You know, this thing called affirmative action kicked in, and with affirmative action came, you know, minority status, you know, given to women, which meant black women had a double minority status, were black and female, and that's a direct competition for black males who had a singular, you know, identity as far as this system of minority status once again. So there was a competition that had never really been the argument before, because, you know, black folks were pretty much about survival, you know, and the struggle of survival, you know, naturally brought about a bond, you know, of togetherness, regardless of whatever, you know, adversarial themes may appear, you know, like, for an example, you know, womanizing, or for an example, you know, abuse, verbal or physical, you know, not to mention substance abuse, not to mention the welfare system that, you know, all too often required, you know, the husband or dad to not be home when the caseworker showed up, so that the mother or the female on welfare could qualify for government assistance, meaning that she was, before it was called single parent, she was, you know, on her own. You know, so it's these, and again, you know where I come from with all this, born from, you know, the attitude of slavery, you know, these conflicts of partnership never really in my estimation anyway, evolved into a healthy retort of understanding of what our roles are one to the other beyond the scope of survival, you know, but instead, you know, shifting into a theme of success, not a singular idea of success, but a cultivated and combined idea of success where we, you know, share the reward, you know, and I don't know if that's been a smooth transition or not. So that's what I mean by, is it normal to have adversarial relationships with significant others? The struggle for, go ahead.
Let me ask you this, in keeping up with that.
You're reversing it. You're turning the tables on me, huh? All right.
No. Just, you know, because we're, you know, and I see you all.
I'm laughing,
tonight,
man.
So thank you all for that out there, because, you know, not only is the chat room popping, we got the phone lines open, and Facebook is jumping too.
Yeah.
So Kim Johnson has been listening with us for a while. She jumps in and she asks, could you use the term conflict? So in a relationship, is adversarial and conflict, is that the same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in my estimation, it is. Now, there may be another word somebody wants to use. But see, this is what I'm talking about. Yeah, conflict, adversarial, absolutely, I love it, man. You know, this is what I'm talking about. Yeah. So, Adam, we're answering the question right now as we engage each other. You know, will black people ever know what normal is? It's up to us to decide that, and it's up to us to answer that question. You know, we've depended on others too long to tell us who we are.
We've allowed other people to define us for so long, and that's even defining what's normal. You know, this isn't back to Africa. We're Americans, and as much as I would, you know, as much as I love the red, black, and green, Marcus Garvey, you know, theologies and ideas and stuff like that, I get it. You know, and that's where we come from. But you know what? That's where I think the whole world came from. First of all, our society where we are right now in this culture, in this time, 2022 in the 21st century, et cetera, we are Americans. We are black Americans, but we're not treated. We don't reap the same benefits. Our normal is not the same normal as everybody else. You know, like Dad said before, how are we a minority in a democratic society? How does that happen? How do we still remain?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, man. Don't let me.
No,
take
go ahead. I'm just saying, how do we still remain the same? How do we still struggle? How do we still? There's little hints of growth here and there, and then there was. Well, that person right there is successful. That person has got, you know, they're doing this and they don't. I mean, but, you know, there's so much adversarial and conflictive responses when we ask the questions about our own growth in being an American and about what's ours in this land of the privilege. How come we're not the privilege? I mean, so I'm sorry.
I mean, this has to be a part of the equation to try to come up with a definition of what it is to be normal. And it may be that all these things we're talking about is what it means to be normal. You know, if you're black in America, you know, it may be just what you just got to say. It may be, in fact, be normal to call each other minority. You know, and not to be offended. You know, it may be normal, you know, to exist in America and have to live, you know, with these things. But, you know, like, but at the same time, right, it may be. But I think the point of tonight's show is to see if we agree with that or not, right?
Right. Or at least, even if we agree or don't agree, or I hate that agree to disagree or whatever.
No, I ain't going there. There ain't no agree to disagree. No, that ain't happening.
At least that I know that there are some people out there that's rubbing their foreheads or their chins or they're scratching their heads like, damn, what is normal? What is this? You know, so then you're personally going within yourself for a minute and thinking about that. Then you're thinking about your family. Then you're thinking about your personal relationships and if you got kids, and then you're going out from there. Like, what is normal? And how do I deal with this normalcy of the day? How do I deal with living in Chicago when I know that, man, shit, man, you know? I play with life every day when I step outside the house. Is that normal? That's not normal. Wow, you know, you shouldn't have to live like that. Not only for my people, but the other people. Adam said, is it normal to get pulled over by the police? Is it normal for me to deliver packages and have to keep looking around to make sure somebody don't try to jack me? Is it normal to walk into a mall and you're worried about some person having a moment with the AR-15 rifles and just, you know?
I
really expanded that whole normalcy thing, but, you know, and bringing it back.
No, not at all. I mean, I just wanted to highlight the other half of what the point was that Adam was making and what he put on the chat room. Is it normal to get pulled over by the police? And the first thought is, I hope I don't die. You know, I mean, is that a normal reaction? You know, like back in the day, you know, I used to drive drunk.
Yeah, I was about to ask you about
that. I used to drive drunk with no driver's license, so therefore I had no insurance or anything back in the day. But I was concerned about being pulled over drunk. I wasn't concerned about being pulled over black. My point is, so I have one eye on the rearview mirror, one eye on the side view mirror, one eye on the road. I ain't got but two eyes. But that has still translated today where, although I'm not drinking, although I have a driver's license, although I've been sober, clean and sober, for 41 years, the new fear, you know, that comes with an old familiar experience. I was concerned then about being pulled over drunk, but now I'm concerned about being pulled over black, and I've been pulled over a lot. It's not like I'm concerned about it, you know, theoretically. I'm concerned about it continually. You know, it's not fun to be pulled over between Texas and California on some lonely road in New Mexico, Nevada. You know, it's not fun to be driving through undesignated dirt road in Alabama as it's getting dark and I'm the only person on the street and sitting on the road, and then there's an unmarked car behind me that becomes very apparent that it's the local establishment. You know, it's an unnerving situation to still find myself driving with one eye on the side view mirror, one eye in the rear view mirror, and one eye on the road, and I still only got two eyes, and one of them is full of cataracts. You know, so it's an unnerving thing. And when Adam asks that question, or makes that statement, that the first thought is, I hope I don't die, I immediately relate to that because that is my traumatic stress experience, that I hope this ain't the last time I see a living soul and without having had the opportunity to say goodbye to everybody, that I'm going to be shot dead on a dirt road somewhere and who shot John Alabama in the early hours of the evening. Yeah, it's become an expected experience, but is it normal, you know, to have that expectation? Or is it normal to have that expectation if you're black? You know, I mean, it's not the kind of conversation that I don't think we're going to hear on the news, you know, because black newscasters are responsible to whoever signs their check. that they dictate what the theme is going to be from any given moment in any given news cycle. You know, these little opportunities here, like we're doing tonight, every show if we want. And even if nobody tunes in, we still get to talk about it. You know, and there to me is no greater of a value than knowing there's somebody I'm talking to about this instead of just, or is it normal to talk to myself? Is that normal? Yeah, anyway. You know, you know, so anyway, so let's move to number four. Is it normal to verbally, physically, or psychologically abuse each other? Is that normal?
I would say no. I would say no. That's not normal.
Yeah. To verbally, physically, and or psychologically abuse each other.
No.
Well, but we do it. But we do it. You know, we do it especially psychologically, you know. And I'm sure there are those who would say, no, we do it especially verbally. Or I'm sure there's just as many say, no, we do it physically, you know, which verbal and physical would still translate in my mind to psychological. You know, there's this prevailing theme that somehow suggests to me that we don't do a good job of liking each other, you know, when it takes on the form of intimacy, whether it's with our significant others, our spouses, or our children. You know, we beat our kids a lot. We verbally abuse our kids a lot. We physically, you know, well, I already said physically, which leaves a psychological scar, you know. And I know, especially my generation, we love to sit around. I'm sorry, you falling asleep? We love to sit around and joke about how mama would chase us down the street. Yeah, mama would chase us down the street with a stick. You know, mama would, you know, would raise that belt. You know, we love to talk about these welts we would have. You know, I mean, there's a difference to me between spankings, whippings, and beating. But there's also a difference between what we define as discipline, you know, and what we defined as self-hatred or self-anger. I think a lot of what we do to other people spring from our dissatisfaction with ourselves. You know, I really do believe that amongst, you know, a black family system, we don't even understand what the roles of the system is. We're not even clear about that collectively, you know, not generally speaking, you know. It's a very strange dynamic of secrecy that seems to blanket black families as a system. You know, we don't really talk outside of the closed circle, you know, what's really going on in the system itself. So it's all kind of vague to us, you know, and that scares me in itself. You know, it's not a consistency of generational growth within the black family system. The generations are collapsing on top of themselves, you know, where, you know, you got, you know, grandmothers, mothers, and daughters, or grandfathers, fathers, and sons all competing with each other for the same attention, you know, from other sources. You know, it's a conflict of interest to me, even when families are thrown into the mix together. Like, you know, what's the rule here? You know, what's the dominant factor of decision making here? Is everybody on their own? Is it every person for themselves? You know, is it the person who has the most assets that is considered to be the know all and say all? You know, it's again comes back to that earlier thing we talked about. So, you know, to question or to try to define or gather an understanding of the norm, you know, means to first give some kind of voice to the confusion. You know, do we really know what we're doing? So let's just, number four, is it normal, number five, you know, It's black on black crime, Norm. I'm not talking about from a moral perspective. I know what we want to say morally, but is it normal? Is black on black crime normal? Is it the expected response in a socioeconomically impoverished community where drug trafficking is the main economic source of survival, and therefore, you know, gang warfare competing for, you know, a status on the block or control of the block, or, you know, I mean, like, is it normal? I mean, again, understanding we don't grow the drugs, you know, that work its way into the community. We don't ship the drugs that work its way into the community, you know. So, and then we have a court system that, oh my God, what it does, which we don't understand, to us when convicted for drug-related offenses. I just read again, you know, maybe this would add it to my moment of depression. A lady who had spent 7 years incarcerated for arrest for marijuana, and then was put in a family setting where she was being monitored, but then had a drug test done and was found that there was an active ingredient like THC, and therefore was put back in jail, even though where she had used it was legal in that state, you know. So, but because it was illegal at the time of her arrest, it was seen as a violation of her probation, her initial, you know, and she wasn't black, she was Hispanic, you know, Hispanic person of color, you know, that, so anyway, coming back to it, you know, is black-on-black crime normal, Will?
I think that, my response to that would, I would have to question the justice system itself, man. We talk about black on black crime, but you know, there's other crime out there as well. There's people that commit crime against their own race besides just black people. To the extent we might read about, we might see and read about, like even here in Chicago, we'll hear more and we'll see more about such crime, like black on black crime, and there's kids involved and children and babies. So the horrific nature of these crimes, yeah, it's a little bit more severe, if you will. But then in looking at the justice system and how a lot of these criminals just go through a revolving network, how they end up in the system and they end up back on the streets again, back in the system, back in the streets again. So, I mean, I hate to hear about these things that happen in our own communities and that we kill each other. I mean, crime, I'm gonna put myself out here and say crime is normal. Is it normal to want to hurt and harm your own people? I don't think it's normal, but I think that, you know, where do we draw the line between conditioning and normal then? I think.
Okay, well, let me just expand. Let me add another word to the mix, because I don't know if you know, when you say, are you saying crime is normal? Or are you saying crime is accepted? Are you saying it's normal or accepted?
I'm saying in America, crime is normal.
Hmm.
That's the American way, I think. In my opinion, that's the American
crime.
Way. Crime. Okay. That's right. Crime.
I'm hearing you, man. I'm not playing devil's advocate at all. I'm hearing you loud and clear. All right, cool. All right. Let's hurry up, move on. Is it normal to call each other nigger?
Yeah,
that's the one I really wanted to get.
Yeah,
to.
I think again that's where we have to question what's the difference between being conditioned and what's normal. I think we've been conditioned to find the normalcy and that identification, and using that word.
Okay, so that's a very slick political way of avoiding the answer. Is it normal to call each other niggas.
Man, you lucky I realized my mute button ain't working tonight. I was about to say something.
I know you're about to call me nigga.
I kicked that.
Is it normal? You know, and it's, again, I'm just asking the question. I'm not looking for what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, just perceptions of response. That's all. Nothing more, nothing less.
I think that,
you know,
we've been,
I have my own thoughts
to,
on that.
That's normal. I think we've been conditioned to accept that that's normal.
So have we conditioned ourselves then?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Gotcha, man. So,
Adam says it's not accepted, but I think we have accepted it. We say, no, it's not accepted, but I think we have accepted it.
Okay, so what does that mean, that it's not accepted? I mean, who is not accepting it? You know, I mean, you know, or is that even a way to look at it? You know, it's used. It's used in I mean, I can hardly turn on a movie where there's not, sometimes it doesn't even matter, but almost always guaranteed, if there's a black person or two in a movie, somewhere nigga gonna show up in the movie. You know, almost guaranteed. But sometimes, even when there ain't no black folks around, it's still going to be thrown out there, especially if you watch a Quentin Tarantino movie. So, you know, and what comes to my mind is Reservoir Dogs. You know, so, okay, just let's just go with what Adam said. It's not, it may be normal, but it's not accepted. It's, I think that's, what do you think, Will? Is that a fair way to?
I mean,
all right.
But that's conditioning, though. But okay.
Okay, conditioning again. By us.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, because, see, what you, why, okay, look, maybe, see, again, I'm a child of the 60s, so I know too well what nigga meant to us in the 60s and what the point of his use was about, you know, and the dialogue of the time shifted that to a more conscious awareness of the degradation behind it. So it was used surgically, you know, to not so much direct it at a person, but at more to a consciousness, you know.
So,
are you saying
in your time, like y'all kicking it, hanging out, I don't know, you know, smoking, drinking, kicking it, whatever, you know, that those loose moments, let's say those loose hanging out moments, that nigga just doesn't come out when you just hanging out and kicking it.
Yep. Quite the contrary. And here's my point. It was an awareness of consciousness. You know, so it was almost like, let's see, how can I put it in a way that maybe can be understood? It was like cussing in your own community and hoping that nobody heard it, so it wouldn't get back to the home. So it was like, yeah, we could, you know, in close, hushed circles, you know, sling it around high or whatever, you know, being cool, you know, especially, you know, as teenagers, but with an awareness of consciousness that it ain't cool, but it is accepted, you know. Or it is cool, but it ain't accepted. But it had to do with the value system of a time that I, you know, that I question if it still exists because of the flagrancy of its use. I mean, it wasn't something that was free. Man, I don't know. It wasn't. Black, what they referred to as the blaxploitation movies of the 60s, maybe ushered into a new and accepted norm, you know, of self-debase, But it was also recognized that these blaxploitation movies were more aimed not toward each other, but toward establishment or toward the system. But that was the theme of the 60s. You know, it's become an accepted form of entertainment now, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's profitable. It's profitable.
Yeah.
It's racist. It's
so,
sexy. You know,
yeah,
using that term.
Yeah,
sexy.
It's profitable. Yeah,
it's
sexy.
Yeah.
Sexy. That's a raphanism if there ever was one. Right on. It's sexy. All right. So we got to all of them but the last one, and I'm just going to hold that one, you know, because that may be a whole topic for another time. All right. I just saw... Just talking about him, and he popped up on in the chat room. You want to read that out?
He says, "Rewind with a question mark. Rewind. Examples of normal opinions are cool, but can it be defined universally amongst Black folks? Keeping in mind, we have been so conditioned by factors. Are we even equipped to define it? Mm-hmm. Are all normals built equally? Question." Can we launch a spark to begin forming a definition?
That's the idea, Ray, right there. Can we launch a spark? You know, first comes the spark. Can't have no fire without a spark. You know, first comes the spark. Amen. Yeah. What do you think, Will? I mean, I'm loving that. Yeah.
I mean, you know, and looking in the chat room with Adam and Ray and, like I said, Kim is popping some questions here on Facebook. And I know some of the people are probably asking these questions and writing it down on their pen and pads, et cetera. You know, this is the spark that we kind of hope, you know. Kim actually kind of, the question is about normal, but what is normal? Exactly. That's the question.
That's what Adam asked right from the jump, you know. Yeah. And followed up is what is the basis of for normal? Yeah.
But
you know, so let me ask this, Will. Is it normal to be Black in America?
Ooh. I would have loved to have cameras on the listeners to see people's facial expressions. You just asked that question.
Yeah. You know, forget everything else that we've talked about. Is it normal to be Black in America? Is this normal? Is the way we live in a so-called free and democratic society a normal expression of how we live it? This is not normal.
I think that we have been taught that it's not normal. I think that, you know, we have been taught that America is the home of white male America, and they welcome people of color who come from other countries who can help support and give to the progression of capitalism and making things sexy in America. And if that's not a political response, I don't know.
That's pretty good. So is it normal to be Black in America?
I don't think.
The way we live it. Yeah.
I think that, no. I think that for us, it's not normal. I think we're looked at like we're not normal people.
I think that psychiatry even, would agree if the range of study would allow that pursuit, I think it would then agree. You know, and I only cite those who have sat at the head of psychology and psychiatry to back my statements. Like the father of American psychiatry, a signer of the Declaration of Independence, Dr. Benjamin Rush. You have a hospital in Chicago, Rush Presbyterian. That's Benjamin Rush Presbyterian Hospital. You know, said that, you know, Black people of his day suffered from a disease called negritude, similar to leprosy, and the only cure was to become white. And he didn't mean psychologically. He meant the skin to become white. You know, Dr. Carl Jung, that people love to talk about, and I ain't got no problem with that. And, you know, like, there's many things that, you know, that Jung has done, you know, for my world even, except my world of Black, because, you know, his thought was that you know, the undoing of American society would be close association with black people. And he said that at the turn of the, you know, 20th century. You know, and yet and still, he studied African lore, borrowed, you know, generously from African language, you know, like his term of archetype was by no means original. That was taken from Hebrew, which means African, you know, which meant the seed, you know. So, but it's, and also, you know, hey, man, you know, it was through Dr. Jung that that AA found spirituality, you know. So, you know, so it's the confusion to me of being black in America that really in itself suggests that the confusion is normal. But what to do with that confusion, you know, is the question. And the way we deal with that confusion is also the question to me. You know, it is normal to be confused if you're black in America. It is normal to feel victimized, depressed, out of sorts, maybe even, you know, suffering from some kind of mental disorders that may be related to post-traumatic stress syndrome or disorder. You know, but until, you know, Ray likes to say, you know, until the one-size-fits-all theory is laid aside, you know, how will we know what we do in the way we do it? How will we be able to accurately decipher, you know, not just what's normal, but what's healthy and what's unhealthy? Maybe if we could look at normal, healthy, unhealthy, that triad in itself, we could then begin to look at, well, you know, in a few hundred years, we shouldn't be surprised that this is where we are after that piece of paper was signed in 1865. That really, you know, was just a piece of paper that government has been arguing about and chopping up ever since. You know, so maybe, you know, what's normal is understanding that it's confusing, you know, to be black in America. But, Ray, I see Adam say, Ray, press one to get your voice out there. We don't have to wait for him to press one. We can bring him in, put out your pressing one. You know,
that ain't got no problem with bringing certain people on the show without you pressing
that,
one.
Not at all.
I'm just telling you, I'm just saying, but you know, he got no problem putting you on the spot.
Yeah. I saw Jay Pastor out there for a minute, but he disappeared because I sure was going to snatch him by the scruff of his neck.
Probably feeling that. Like, I better watch out for him. I'm feeling it tonight.
You know, man. So, you know, man, so we've zipped past the first hour. We're moving into an hour and a half. Maybe this is a good time to, you want to bring some folks in, man?
Well, I know Adam's been chomping at the bit, but I'm going to pull in I don't recognize this number here, but it's an area code 214 area code 677. Area code 214-677. So hey, thank you for listening tonight. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, man, I just switched phones.
Okay.
Talk about the sneak attack. He changed tactics on me. What's up, Jay Pastor?
Yes, sir. Hey, man, listen, I haven't had the opportunity to, you know, be real well-versed in different cultures and, you know, I've never been white in America. I've never been Mexican in America. You know, I've never been China in America, Asian in America. But, hey, man, and this is my opinion. It might not count for much, but and I might cause a lot of this to myself. But, man, I think the hardest thing to be is to be not only, you know, black in America, but to be an African-American male in America. You know, my daddy says that, you know, when he say he get up, he look in the mirror, he see a human being. But he say when he steps outside that door, he's perceived as a black man, you know. Mm-hmm. So a lot of, you know, post-traumatic that comes with that. And, you know, for taking my lumps, I probably played a part, played right into it, you know, right on cue, you know, with the N-word, with the gang banging, with the, you know, you know, lack of parental skills and, you know, prison and all that that goes with it. But the good thing is, you know, by the grace of God, we still here, we still got action. And every day I, you know, try to strive, you know, to take that stigma off of, you know, what America perceives in a black male, you know. And I'm thankful for, you know, Uncle Bill, for the Lord's will, for Ray, Adam, and for those that are around me to set that example and that reflection, you know, to show me like, no, you know, you don't have to, you know, be a statistic. You don't have to participate in the foolishness, you know. You can be an American and not be considered and labeled as, you know, a nigger or, you know, African-American or whatever. So, man, I really appreciate y'all. Man, I love y'all and thank y'all so much just for everything that y'all do. You know, whether, you know, a lot of times we think that, oh, we didn't get a plaque for it or, you know, we didn't get no check for it or something. Right. But, hey, man, just keep planting. And pretty soon, you know, you're going to see a harvest in due time. And I appreciate that.
Amen. That's being the invisible man. But it has its benefits for sure.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, like what Jay Pastor just said tonight, sometimes that's where we find visibility through the comments we make to one another. Everybody can't be a Malcolm X. You know, everybody can't be a Barbara Jordan. Everybody can't, you know, be a Kamala Harris. Everybody can't be a, you know, Medgar Evers, Dr. Martin Luther King, Joe, Muhammad Ali, you know. But we can acknowledge one to the other that in spite of lack of title, lack of initials behind our name, lack of recognition, we all can recognize one to the other that in spite of all that, every one of us has walked the front line, you know, of just what it means to be black in America. We've walked the front lines. You know, America, you know, chooses who it wants to identify as the icons, but we don't have to be, you know, held suspect to that. You know, no, I don't care what anybody says in the 60s. Yeah, I didn't march on Washington. In the 60s, I didn't, you know, take part in the riots after King was assassinated. Yeah, in the 60s, I wasn't, you know, part of the Democratic Convention when Daley gave the order to shoot to kill. I was in the armed service, you know, the armed service. Isn't that ironic? A Catholic boy raised in a somewhat middle-class Southside community at the time, you know, now it's, you know, gone to rot. But, you know, nobody can tell me that in just my struggles for identity through all of what was going on, being Catholic and seeing the rise in the Muslim agenda, you know, and even amongst my own, you know, being called, you know, names I was called that only my own could call me because it didn't mean anything to other races. Nobody can tell me I didn't walk the front lines in the same struggle for identity, in the same struggle for my own civil rights. You know, I don't care what our identities were then, and I don't care what our identities are today. And every brother and every sister out here is walking the front line in whatever way we walk it,
absolutely,
and however we do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, amen.
Absolutely. We all have a line, a front line that we walk, you know, whether it be, you know, in the streets or, you know, I don't know, you know, JP, I don't know, but I'm going to say even like in jail, being incarcerated, wherever it is, you know, we still, and I love what you just said, we still got action. As long as we got action and we got intention, we always walk in that line. We always on that front line.
Mm. And let me just say something, Will. Here's the situation right here. You said, you don't know because you wasn't there. But you got somebody on the line right now who can tell you, what was the experience? You know, what was it like? You know, what did you draw from, Jay Pastor, from being black in prison and black male in prison?
Man, I had a lot of different experiences, you know.
That was the hope. Amen. Yeah.
Yeah, that helped kind of shape a moment. I remember one experience, I was like 19. I probably was the youngest dude on the whole yard, the whole form, the whole unit, that whole particular prison. And the way they got the prison set up, man, Texas in prison, summers are like, you know, if you think about, oh, it's hot right now, imagine, you know, at least we can kind of come inside, air conditioning
yeah.
our car, you know, but they have you housed in basically in warehouses, you know, sheet metal, you know, so it's kind of like, you know, being Ooh. Wrapped in foil, you know.
Man.
And they have a lot of different, like, dorms, like 69 people to a dorm, so a lot of different personality. But I was in Edinburgh, which is 30 minutes away from Mexico. So the prison was predominantly Mexicans. The guards were like 95% Hispanics, probably. You know, 90 with a few whites, maybe like two blacks, but one of the black dude wore boots and a cowboy hat. So he pretty much probably Mexican himself, you know, on the pool. But they have water coolers outside the dorms, you know, and you save your peanut butter jar and clean it out, and that's your cup, probably, you know what I'm saying? So I was, you know, it's like three dorms that share this one water cooler, and you got to get the officer who's inside the picket to pop the door for you to go out and go to the water cooler. So I was at the door waiting on the man to pop the door, kept trying to get him to pop the door, and finally he popped the door. I went to the water cooler, and he called me a nigger. You know, he said it kind of like under his breath, you know, and man, I was 19, maybe 20. Man, that hurt me, man, you know. Hypersensitive, maybe, you know. Ironically, you know, I could get back in the dorm. I mean, and I wouldn't complain about it. I ain't put nothing about writing a grievance or nothing. I told, like, the ranking officer, but, you know, he ain't do nothing. They ain't do nothing. You know, it's one of their comrades.
Correct.
And I really, probably because I was, you know, saved, I really wasn't thinking. I really should have went and pissed in my peanut butter jar and threw some piss in there on him. You know what I'm saying? I should have really made him pay for it. I should have acted a nigga on him. You know what I'm saying? I was so hurt and so crushed, I wasn't thinking about it. I also had another experience, I think I might have mentioned this before, where it was a black officer, and this had to be, you know, probably 8 years later. So I would have been, I guess, about 27. It was when Obama got his first inauguration. I was in prison. And,
wow.
You know, they was watching on one TV, they was watching, like, Gun Smoke or something, and I forgot Price is Right, maybe on the other TV, and black officer came in like, man, y'all ain't watching inauguration? You know, we so removed from society, like, bro, I ain't even know if it was inauguration jumping off today. You know what I'm saying? I probably knew that, you know, that Obama had got voted president or something, but so he changed one TV to the inauguration, but that TV was the TV that was real low. I went and asked the other guys, like, hey, you know, can we switch TVs with y'all? We can hear the inauguration. And they said, yeah, but I guess it was the old white man. You know, he was mad about Obama. He wanted to hear Gun Smoke, or he wanted me to slap him or something, because he, like, started kind of running his mouth. Like, oh, man, y'all done just hogged and y'all done just took the TV. You know what I'm saying? First of all, man, I asked. The majority said, yeah. So, man, boy, be quiet. And I ain't got to slap you. I'm going to let Obama serve you. You know what I'm saying? Like,
hey,
I'm
going to
let this inauguration slap you and punish you. Because he was an older gentleman.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know he was, you know, one generation removed from slavery or something, you know. And then my last story was, this had to be, I guess 2011, you know, Serena was playing and, you know, they had some, I was in the feds. Now the federal system going to have more diverse race. Now in the state system, man, it's, bro, for us to make up 12%, the state system, man, it's a lot of us in there. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, well,
for 12%,
you know,
yeah,
like, mm-hmm. like the, you know, the enemy, you know, the powers that be. I don't really know who bewitched us, but man, it's a lot of us in there, and it's a lot of us. You know, some beautiful brothers, man, some educated brothers. You know, it's some, I know, but it's a lot of us in there. But anyway, just to get out the way and make room for other people, man, in the federal system, it's different. It's a lot of different cultures, you know. It's still a lot of us in there as well, but you have people from all over the country. And you have people who, you know, a lot of people who really had some real big money, you know. So, but, they had the Clear Brothers was watching the tennis, and I'm a big Serena fan. Like, man, love me some Serena. And I really enjoyed, you know, I'm very loud too, you know. So I really enjoyed, you know, the opportunity that I had, you know, to kind of flex through Serena. Yeah, every hit, and it's just because, you know, tennis is not, it's not a sport. I mean, you know, like basketball, football, the brothers going to be around. So tennis wasn't a sport where the brothers were sitting around watching. It was the Clear people. Oh, man, they must have thought that they people had a chance. Because, oh, no. Serena, don't fail me now, baby. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm riding on you. So, I had that opportunity to kind of root for Serena, but just the ultimate experience, though, is the fact that, you know, they have prison system, you know, they have a lot of Caucasian guards that, you know, they take you out to the host squad, you know, and they recreate the slavery scene where they riding on these horses. You know what I'm saying? And they up on the horses and they got their guns and you out there in the heat of the day working on the, you know, like
that's
life,
right.
Like movie life. Nah, like it's real. You know what I'm saying? They call it the host squad, you know, and they got you out there and you chumping it, you know, you got that hoe and you working, man, and they got this horse and they'll let you fight. They'll let you fight one another, drop the Aggie and let y'all fight for entertainment. They might bet lunch on you, you know what I'm saying, on who gonna win. And but it's a system that's created to strip you of your, you know, your dignity and your sanity. You know what I'm saying? Like, at any given moment, they can tell you, like, you can just be walking to child, and they'll tell you, like, hey, get out of them. That means they want you to just strip search butt naked right here with another 80 people just walking to child. You just out here just taking off all your clothes, you know what I'm saying? You got to shower with 80 other people, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's really a system that's designed to, like, if you had any type of dignity left, it designed, you know, they'll call you boy, you know, they'll call you boy in a minute, and, man, it's really, man, a system that's designed, man, to break you mentally, man, you know?
Yeah, well, Will, is that walking the front line?
Man,
I mean, there's an example. Right on, exactly. Man. Thank you, Jay Pastor. Yeah. I want to share a story right quick. I think we only got about 15 minutes left, and I want to squeeze this in. Will, are you okay with that?
Okay.
It'll take us right to the end just about. There's a book. It's called The Clowns of God.
That sounds like Ray. I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, I'm double dutching. No, go see.
Okay, there's a book, and it's called The Clowns of God. That's the title, by Morris West. It was written in 1981, and it's revolving around the Catholic Church, namely Pope Gregory the 17th. But in the book, he's called John Marie Beretta, you know, and he abdicated under mysterious circumstances. In other words, he stepped down from the popedom. Only an old friend knew the truth. The Pope had a vision. And this was his vision. I was called to proclaim that the last days were very near and that mankind should prepare for the parousia, or the second coming of the Lord Jesus. And the Vatican powers were ready to declare the Pope insane if he didn't retire to a monastery. Okay, so that's the background. And this is a fictional book. However, you have to understand something. I was drawn into this book indirectly. I have a very dear friend, Emma, and Will, you know her, who was a mentor to me when I returned to Chicago after completing rehab for alcoholism and living in northern Illinois for a couple years. Emma's teenage son was a patient of St. Jude's Children's Hospital in Chicago. I'm not sure exactly what happened to him, but as a youngster, maybe around 4 or 5 years old, which he was a child model, healthy, handsome, and who knows what the world held in store for his parents' dreams for him, and maybe he had even some of his own. But a disease brought an end to those dreams. And for Emma's family, the nightmare of endless diagnosis treatments and continual 24-hour care at the hospital went on for the next 10 or 15 years until her son died. But before all of this, my mentor Emma had convinced me to attend an experiential workshop called Breathwork in 1984. I was 3 years into my recovery, but was perplexed by the meetings, follow-up, and aftercare groups that only wanted to hear about how grateful I was to be a recovering alcoholic. I mean, she had grown so weary of hearing me continuously complain about this 3 year thing that didn't seem to want to acknowledge anything else to me but being a grateful recovering alcoholic, that she mentioned this workshop, which she also attended. And that was the first time I heard about her son. I didn't know that she even had a son. As she shared the tragic details of his life, and this is before he died, the despair, sadness, confusion, heartbreak, and anger, mostly all of which was directed toward God, I was frozen in my tracks by her emotional release. I don't think she had any intention, I really don't, of sharing such an intimate, well-kept secret, especially among a crowd of mostly strangers. Anyway, one of the group mentioned the clowns of God, but not about the Pope, you know, not about the Pope stuff, but instead about the second coming and the part about how not everyone recognized him as Jesus. And at one point, he visited a school for children with Down syndrome, and he spoke to those around. And this is what he said in the book. I know that you are I know what you are thinking. You need a sign. What better one could I give but to make this little one whole and new? I could do it, but I will not. I am the Lord and not a conjurer. That's like a magician. I gave this mite a gift that I denied all of you. Eternal innocence. To you, she looks imperfect, but to me, she is flawless, like the bud that dies unopened or the fledgling that falls from the nest to be devoured by ants. She will never offend me, as all of you have done. She will never pervert or destroy the work of my Father's hands. She is necessary to you. She will evoke the kindness that will keep you human. Her infirmity will prompt you to gratitude for your own good fortune. More, she will remind you every day that I am who I am, that my ways are not yours, and that the smallest decimite whirled in the darkest places does not fall out of my hand. I have chosen you. You have not chosen me. This little one is my sign to you. Treasure her. Now, you know, that's the end of that. Now, of course, this is a fictional book, right? Yet where does fiction come from, y'all? Anyway, I think in some abstract way, there is a message for the United States of America regarding black people and black people of color in this country. And that's just my point of view, my opinion. And I only profess to be an expert in one area, and that's my opinion. So I just wanted to share that with y'all, man. You know, I just think that there is an innocence, you know, that does cloak black people in America. You know, it's born from servitude, but where the spark of God ignited such a response that whatever freedoms we enjoy today are enjoyed from a people that had no reason to think they were anything more than slaves. They couldn't read. You know, they couldn't think on their own. They were, you know, they were reduced to the status of chattel. They weren't even a whole person. They were traded, bartered, murdered, you know, randomly sold, separated, you know, degraded, abused physically, sexually, you know, and were put on the, you know, auction. But somehow through all that, you know, the spark of God, you know, ignited such a freedom, you know, that it allowed us to become who we are today. And I think in so many ways, when we ask what's normal, you know, what is normal to be black in America? I think this is a part of it, you know, that we are something that only exists in us, you know, and we are a perplexing and peculiar people, but only exists in America. You know, when everything has been set for our failure, you know, just what Jay Pastor just described, you know, we somehow rise above that, right? And in all our flaws, there's still an element of innocence, you know, with us and with our offspring, you know, that in spite of all the rest, all the things we went through, Will, the checkpoints and everything else, even the crime issue, black on black or whatever, there is still this element, you know, of hope that remains, you know, that we somehow miraculously believe, you know, God ain't done with us yet. And America is all the better for it, you know, because I do believe if God was done with us, God would be done with America. So anyway, man, that's my closing commentary, man, and I'm backing off.
Wow.
Is Ray still out there? Yeah.
Yeah, we just opened up everybody's mic, so.
Oh, you just opened up everybody. Right on, man. Yeah.
We just about everybody.
I got a piece, man. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah, what's yes, going on?
Yeah, you got a minute. We got 7 minutes. Yeah, right on, man. Do
okay.
It.
Yeah, that was on point, yeah. Man. I'm in the background, kind of being able to mute and unmute, man. But no, that's and who knows? Maybe y'all have spilled this. Maybe this will spill over to another program when, you know, Monday or Wednesday. Who knows? Lord willing.
Amen.
But I definitely wanted to consider some of, you know, attacking, like, the, you know, we're in a capitalistic society as far as black folk in America.
Yeah.
And I know reparations, kiki, ha ha, and all that good stuff. It's not necessarily the reparations part. And again, putting it all in the vacuum. Like I'm saying, put it all in the vacuum. Like, you know, because there's just levels to all of this. But let's put it in the vacuum as if we can get as close to starting over as possible. Same time, same resources hitting America. Same time, same resources hitting America. You know, we had the same opportunities to kill as many Indians as y'all have. You know, whatever. Like, we had the same opportunity all the way. And I'm saying that to say it starts with, which, you know, again, you can't get to that vacuum, got to be kind of like a D reparation. It's not necessarily shifting the finances over to one side. No, man. But both sides, you know, not both sides, but, like, everybody start over. Like, everybody go broke. Like, D reparation at the joint. Like, put it in escrow somewhere.
Wow.
You know, I don't know, but
that can
you know, again, we're spitballing here. We're in a vacuum. Just something to consider, man. Like, it's the economic stronghold, and JP was rapping about it. Like, yeah, I mean, he was like, man, intelligent brothers in the pen and all this, this and that. I mean, it's a lot of that, because we're in this Western Hemisphere in America, a lot of that stems from economic unequalism, opportunities, whatever you want to call it, man. But anyway, to be continued, Lord willing, on this topic, man. But that y'all hitting this area of trying to define normal, and I want to be, you know, hopefully I can be a part of that spark as y'all continue, Lord willing. Love y'all, man.
Continuing Monday, guaranteed. Amen. Amen. All right, is that all right with you, Will? We just can carry it over to Monday.
I mean, yeah, we can keep it going, man. I mean, you know, because you always be a part of this anyway, regardless if we continue it or not. I feel like this is probably one of those pieces. You know, we've done these shows, you and I, Dad, for a couple of years now. And there's just been certain subject matter, certain pieces, you know, that they last. You know, like we've talked a lot about different subjects, and but there's certain things, you know, like this right here, that will definitely continue to pop back up. So I mean, we're in it every day. Yeah, we're definitely going to continue to talk about it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right on.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Amen. Well, I'm gonna let you land this airplane, man. I just want to thank Adam. We may not have heard your voice, but we sure read your words, man. So I hope you're all right with that until next week, man. Ray, Jay Pastor, I see Sister Brenda's out there, you know, and any and everyone else. You know, Will, you ran down the list of a few. I just want to personally thank everyone for joining this dialogue tonight. Very, very meaningful to me. Yeah. All right, Will.
Yeah, right on. Thank you, everybody. Also, in addition, Sue and Kim, Facebook.
Yeah.
So, you know, thank you all for supporting and listening.
I saw Sue. Right. Thank you, man.
Especially for 2 hours tonight, man. You all could have been doing a lot of things tonight, but, you know, you shared your time with us. Because Dad and I, we're going to be here. You know what I'm saying? Y'all take your time, you know.
Amen.
To be with us. So thank you. Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Right on. Right on, Will. All right, y'all.
All right. So this is the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show, ladies and gentlemen, where we try to provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experience, especially when we share interpretations and feelings. So like I said earlier, I'm Will. That's Bill over there. And again, we are... We're live every Monday and Wednesday here on blogtalkradio.com. As always, please be safe, be blessed. Most importantly, please be yourself, because, man, everybody else is taken. Talk to y'all soon. Have a good night. Amen.
Love you, Will. Love you,
Love
Will.
You too. Right on. Love you too.
Yes, I should be crying. My
heart. Uh-oh. Sorry about that. Rewind. Sorry about that.
I can't remember why I'm feeling this way. I guess I should be crying, but my heart just won't obey. If you stay, it should be happy as I lie here on the rooftop in the rain. I say get me.